of you in the audience. I think we have an interesting meeting today. The subject is one that is very elusive, I think, so far as determining what really are the costs of SIM/CAM. And hopefully we will have some light shed on that subject today, on that issue today. With that, we have some invited testimony. Frank McNamara, I think, is listed first. Excuse me, yes, she's not on the list, and I'm very sorry, I apologize. Yes, Superintendent Castillo, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Susan Castillo, State Superintendent for Public Instruction. I want to thank the committee for giving us this opportunity to present some really important information that I think a lot of people have been waiting to receive. We're going to be releasing two studies on the costs associated with Oregon standards and assessments, otherwise known as those hot-button acronyms, SIM and CAM. And we just want you to know that please call and invite us here at any time to provide you with information to help you with the very difficult decisions that you have today in this very difficult time for our students and educators in the state of Oregon. And we're hoping that today's information is going to clear up some of the misconceptions about the issue of SIM and CAM. And we really welcome this opportunity, actually, to focus on this and so that we can continue to have really good discussions based on good data about what the actual costs involved. We know that there have been some statements made about hundreds of millions of dollars being costs associated with SIM and CAM, and you will hear today on from COSA and from the Department of Education in two separate surveys and studies that the costs associated with SIM and CAM are more in the range of $30 to $50 million a biennium. And so we have people here from COSA and from the department who have all of the details that explain how we got to those figures. And also just wanted to remind you that later today the Oregon University System, the Oregon Community Colleges, and the Department of Education will release a study demonstrating significant correlation between performance on 10th grade assessment tests, performance on the SAT, and the first-year college GPA, and that information will be released today as well. So we welcome this conversation and want to provide you with all the information that you need to make decisions about these issues. And with that, I think COSA is up next. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Frank McNamara, and I'm representing Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, COSA. And I have with me two superintendents, the superintendent from Ben Lapine, Doug Nelson, and the superintendent from North Clackamas School District, Ron Naso. And I brought them to answer any really hard questions that you might present to me, and I'll take anything that's considered a softball.
We're supposed to
know. That's right. My instruction was to make them look like I knew something. Chair Backlin, members of the committee, I've passed out copies of the survey report that COSA did in the second week of January this year, so just a month ago. We had 56 of the 198 districts responding to our survey. That's about 28%. They were fairly representative. That is, we had responses from urban, rural, east of the mountains, west of the mountains, in the valley, down south, on the coast, and we think they were fairly representative of the districts around the state, although certainly not a scientifically drawn sample. The districts were asked to identify the cost associated with implementing the standards that are represented in the Certificate of Initial and Certificate of Advanced Mastery. And what they identified were the cost, which I want to emphasize don't necessarily convert into a savings number. The survey group identified that as of the 56 districts, they identified about $1.98 million that they could identify as a cost for SIM, and about $1.34 million they could identify as the cost for CAM, for a total of $3.3 million. And then if we extrapolate those costs as if these were representative districts to the statewide total, based on the student population that they represented, the statewide costs that they identified for SIM and CAM were $10.4 million per year. The messages that I would hope to leave you with today related to the survey data. We had not just the numbers provided to us, but comment provided to us on these numbers by the districts. And there are four things that I hope that you would be aware of as we finish. One, I mentioned already that the districts can identify costs that are associated with implementing the standards, but these costs are not necessarily savings if you do away with those standards. Some of them are, some of them are not. Most of the work that is done in elementary, middle, and high schools related to SIM and CAM is done by staff who will still be there with or without SIM and CAM acronyms and standards. The schools are doing what they believe to be research-based best practices. What they do is aligned with SIM and CAM standards and is done not because these are the state standards, but rather because they are a good education practice. So having the standards, having the assessment, and dealing with accountability and reporting to communities is a part of what they would do, whether or not they did it under the acronym titles of Certificates of Initial and Advanced Mastery or not. And finally, I would emphasize that the federal No Child Left Behind Act, NCLB, that's affectionately being termed, I understand, by people in the schools as NCLB, NCLB, Nick LB. The NCLB law, federal law, requires schools to, number one, have standards. It requires schools, number two, to have rigorous assessment. It requires schools, number three, to annually test the academic skills of the students. And number four, to report individual and school results to parents in the community. All of these are things I would point out that we do now under the titles of SIM and CAM and the assessments related thereto. With that, Mr. Chair, I would ask for you to hear from two of the districts. And let me just say, if you look at the chart, which, by the way, I hadn't really intended to attach, but in the end decided it was better to give you more than to give you less information. So these are the actual districts that responded to our survey on the very back page of your report. And you'll notice the second and third districts from the bottom. One is Bend Lapine with almost 14,000 students. The other is North Clackamas with a little more than 15,500 students. And if you look across the line, you see that they had some divergence in what they reported in terms of cost. And I thought it would be instructive for you and for all of us to hear from them about how they understand SIM and CAM costs and potential savings. And with that, I'd like to hear from whoever wants to start.
Okay. Thank you, Frank. Chair Backlund and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to address you on this very important topic. I submitted two items today. Rather than my testimony, I thought these would speak for themselves. One is a letter to Representative Miller in response to his call to eliminate SIM and CAM, and the other is a position paper that was developed by our administrative team. I think they speak for themselves. So rather than replicate those, I just brought those to emphasize my testimony. First of all, I want to, when you look at the chart that Frank submitted, you'll see Ben Lapine has zeros across the chart. We do not believe the elimination of Seaman CAM will save any money. Because we integrate, we've already integrated within our instructional program the tenets of the SIM and the CAM, particularly the SIM. The majority of the hard and expensive work has already been completed. And as we are moving our district forward, we believe that elimination of the SIM particularly may cost us money because of the benchmarking we're doing against similarly constituted school districts. Benchmarking is best done in that manner. We would have to, on our own, find the data to continue that benchmarking work. So for continuous improvement within our district, the SIM provides us the data that we need within our state to continue to move forward. Just like any quality organization, we measure our progress not only against ourselves but against other organizations. The SIM sets us up in that manner. You may be fans of the comics, and you maybe have read Dilbert over the last week or so. And if you've been reading Dilbert, you've noticed that he went to the doctor and he got a prescription. And he went to his pharmacist, and the pharmacist said, "Well, I can't read this information. I'm just going to give you a prescription." Wasn't what he needed, and now he has an exoskeleton growing. But that wasn't what he went to get treated for. His pharmacist picked any piece of data. And he said, "This will work." Well, what the SIM provides for us at the school level, at the district level, and for you at the state level is good data from which to make decisions on student instruction and on program. We don't want to end up like Dilbert and having poor data. We have very limited resources, and we don't need to tell you that. And these data help us then to make good decisions. If we take a look at some important educational decisions that we have to make, number one, consistency and monitoring of student academic progress, measuring program and instructional effectiveness with comparison groups, and adjusting instruction for individual student needs, we can probably do that fairly well at the classroom level. But once we start to look across a building, across a district, and for you to look across the state, without a consistent statewide assessment, those tasks would become very difficult, if not impossible. Therefore, the SIM provides a very important focus for all of us to have continual gains in student learning. I'll tell you a story about an elementary school. R.E. Jewell Elementary was one of 97 exceptional schools this year. 2 years ago, it was satisfactory. It was run-of-the-mill. A little bit more about Jewell Elementary. This year, 92% of its students on the statewide assessment met standards on reading. The school has 57% free and reduced lunch and serves 800 students a year. And we only count them as 500 students because of the continual turnover. This is a school with a principal that has a consistent vision and a staff with a consistent vision that is tied very much to the SIM standards so that they can continue to provide the best education possible for all students. The focus on literacy, mathematics, and science have driven that school to that high level of performance. And as Frank said, they are positioned very well to work with NCLB. Their focus has been on core academics and core basics to ensure that high level of achievement. What's important also is that SIM is broad-based. The SIM standards, our assessment standards, are broad-based. They're for all students, not just our high-end students, but for all students, which is really the goal that we have from our reform efforts to ensure that each student in our state has a quality school and a quality education. And when we adults, and I include everyone here, take these standards seriously, students rise to that level of expectation as measured through the SIM. Let me talk a little bit about CAM. CAM, to me, is a low-cost way to reform particularly our high schools. It's a way to organize our high schools so that our students may focus their precious resource of time on courses which make sense in terms of their long-term goal. It encourages a close examination at the high school level and, again, has great promise for the reform of high schools. Both the SIM and the CAM as state requirements enable us, superintendents particularly, to move the change process along very effectively. I know when I say this, a few of you will smile. High school teachers tend to be very difficult to accept change and accept, that's what I thought would happen. and they're sometimes reluctant to move. But because we can use the strategy you, the legislature, have made us, we can start to move in directions that are very beneficial for students. Our high school teachers are looking at right now at whether or not the sim and the cam will continue. I know that those who believe in the tenets of the sim and cam are moving very rapidly to reform their high schools in our district so that we can, in fact, meet the challenges of our Reform Act. And that's really our goal, is to ensure that our high schools are better and effective for each of our students. And it seems to me that if we want to continue to meet that promise of having an effective school and an effective education for each one of our students, leaving the sim and cam in place are very important. And it's our leadership as the adults looking at this system, to make sure that students understand that we demand the rigor that is contemplated by the original law, and we maintain that rigor. Thank you.
Doug, a couple things, if I may. For the record, I don't think you identified yourself, and we should ask you to do that.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Doug Nelson. I'm superintendent of the Bend Lapine Public Schools.
Thank you.
In Bend, Oregon.
And then my question was, I've tried to get a kind of a broad-based sample or sampling from superintendents and others across the state. And in dealing with CAM, my impression was that CAM would cost quite a bit of money, in part because it involves so much of work into the community, but it hasn't been implemented yet in many cases. And so the thought is, if something were done in terms of money savings, maybe CAM could be modified or reduced or something along those lines. I take it, though, that you would disagree with that.
Well, in our case, we've had, working in our school district, a school-to-career program, or we are already working in the community, working with our business community to provide those opportunities for our students. So for us, it was something that we would continue to do because it's good practice, it makes sense, and it's what's important for our students for their future. So there really is not a cost savings, because that's something that we would do anyway.
Mm-hmm. Do you like the education plan for each student?
Yes.
In the CAM?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense. It helps students work with their parents and with the school to clearly identify their goals and how they will utilize their high school education to achieve their goals. Mm-hmm. So, it's something we're doing now in a very cost-effective manner without adding huge costs to our system.
How much time does that take to develop that plan?
The best example I can use is Lapine High School, which is our, we have four comprehensive high schools. It's a high school of about 450 students. It takes about, they meet once a week in what are a variety of names, but we call it guide groups, and they are meeting with a teacher on a weekly basis to look at their plan and to each year of their high school experience to have different experiences related to their individual plan. It's just, if the teachers weren't doing that, they'd be doing something else. And what we've done, because of the amount of time they spend in these groups, they will earn a half a credit a year for their work in this area, working on their plans. And that's the way this one high school has done this, in a very cost-effective manner.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And before I forget, too, Doug, I want to express my appreciation to you for your writing me a letter some time ago, just at the very beginning of the session, and it was very helpful with our group, who our two vice chairs and I, and along with Jim, meet on a weekly basis to consider things, and your information was very helpful.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
Ron.
Mr. Chairman Backlund, members of the committee, my name is Ron Naso, and I'm the superintendent of the North Clackamas School District, a district of 15,800 students. I come before you today to offer testimony regarding legislation to repeal Certificate of Initial Mastery and Certificate of Advanced Mastery. I understand that that's not specifically what this meeting is about, but I do know that there are bills in the wind. The Board of Directors of the North Clackamas School District recently approved a resolution, and that resolution is attached to the packet. I'm not going to read that resolution except to say to you that one of the elements in that does refer to a strong support for the SIM and CAM programs, and I will allow you certainly to read that resolution on your own. For the past 8 years, since the legislature revised the SIM-CAM legislation in, actually the SIM legislation in 1995, our school district has worked diligently to retool our curricula and instructional strategies to work toward the content standards which have been established as part of the SIM program. We've done so in part because it was the law, but more significantly, because we believe that the standards represent legitimate and meaningful goals for our students and teachers. Like the rest of the state, we've made considerable progress in the last 5 years. To be sure, more of that progress has been at the elementary level than perhaps at the high school level, and Doug sort of alluded to some of that. We believe that the standards in reading, writing, mathematics, science, and social studies are important for students and for the state. For the past 5 years, our district has worked actively to develop a program to meet the standards of the Certificate of Advanced Mastery. We've played a leadership role in this regard. We have done so in part because it was the law, but more significantly because we believe that there should be direct efforts to develop a relationship between classroom learning and its application in real-world settings. In fact, this has been an active goal of the North Clackamas School District since 1990. Our Save and Skills Center, our Job Shadow programs, and our Career Counseling programs all predate the development of the existing CAM guidelines. Over the past year, in the midst of budget shortages, I have been both amused and bemused to hear critics of the SIM and CAM attribute untold sums of expenditures to the SIM and CAM programs. For the record, insofar as the North Clackamas School District is concerned, those costs are grossly overstated. And that's coming from a superintendent who, on that pink sheet, indicated that we do have expenses that we think are directly attributable to SIM and CAM. Our annual budget is approximately $100 million. An analysis of our budget, and we went through the budget pretty carefully, would show that elimination of the SIM program could save our district $320,000 if, and I emphasize, if we choose to eliminate the after-school and summer school tutoring programs, which we now fund to help students meet SIM standards. That program was put into place 4 years ago by our Board of Education, Board of Directors, to help youngsters meet SIM standards. Ironically, the reductions in funding, which we fear we may face in the coming year, will probably accomplish this elimination with or without the elimination of the SIM. It is an expenditure that we're having to look at as to whether we can continue to afford. The elimination of the CAM would save our district $260,000. If we choose to eliminate our senior seminar experience, which is part of our CAM program. The senior seminar experience is an independent project for all seniors that is designed to help each student take responsibility for his or her own learning, which actually is the mission statement of the North Clackamas School District. This money, this $260,000, currently funds 4 teaching positions, one in each of our high schools. I am confident that our high school principals will object to a reduction in the staffing. Not so much perhaps a reduction in CAM, but if we said because CAM is eliminated, we're going to take these 4 teachers out of your schools, I think they'd have some serious concerns about that. Finally, we could save approximately $50,000 with the elimination of a technical assistant for data collection and analysis. Because of SIM and because of CAM data, we did in fact hire a technical assistant to help us or a large district to help us compile, analyze, and report that data. The No Child Left Behind Act, however, will probably force us to reinstate that position because of its requirements for the same data submission, for the same analysis. Over a decade ago, this state embarked on a program of vision and accountability for the quality education of all children. 12 years later, as the current administration in Washington takes political credit for vision and accountability for the quality education of all children, we in Oregon are arguing about abandoning the work of a decade that was commissioned by our legislature, only to reinvest our money and energy in work commissioned by the federal government. To abandon the SIM and CAM in this environment, in my mind, would be both educationally and fiscally irresponsible. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I understood what you were saying, Ron, you seem to be saying that even without SIM, that the programs that you have attributed to your cost for SIM are excellent programs that you would have implemented and instituted anyway.
Well, I will say in a short answer, yes. But up until 4 years ago, we didn't have those programs. We didn't have an after-school program that would help youngsters with homework, et cetera. We didn't have summer school programs. We put them in at that point. To take those away, whether SIM existed or not, is a very painful decision for any of us to make.
I have a couple of questions, Mr. Chair, actually for Mr. McNamara, if I could. And I have a couple of them to understand the data and the statistics on your chart, which I'm glad that you did give to us. If I'm understanding this correctly, Frank, this was sent out to 198 superintendents, and 56 of those superintendents or districts responded for a percentage of 28%.
That's correct.
And out of the 28% or the 56 that we have, and let's focus on the number 56, 36 said it didn't cost anything.
That's correct.
So what we're really talking about in the data that is here, and I realize it is a small number, but it would appear that those who really were concerned about this huge cost would have responded. What we're really saying is that 20 of the 198 districts said there was a cost that could be interpreted to be an impairment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, that's correct.
And I guess I would further help me, some of the people on here, particularly.
I have a feeling I'm being led here, but don't.
I'm sorry, yeah. No, I'm just trying to make sure that I'm seeing and we're hearing and saying the numerical part here. At least out of the 20 who did in fact respond that there was a cost, the two that you have, or not that you have, that who are currently presenting to us say that that cost is well worth, maybe I should be asking Doug and Ron, the cost is well worth the results and the accountability that you get from that?
I think without question, what I've seen in the North Clackamas schools in the last 8 years in terms of focus, in terms of cohesiveness, for the district, that is of incredible value that probably you can't put a dollar figure on. Priceless, I believe, the commercial.
Yes, follow up.
One more, Mr. Chair. To Ron again, in regards to your breakdown of the money that you do attribute to this, if I understood correctly, the largest portion of it went to instruction and $50,000 went to record keeping for accountability?
Yes. Representative Backlund and Representative Hobson, in regard to your former question, I would concur with what Ron said. The focus that we have had, the ability to bring our schools together to focus on common goals and common mission have been incredible. And having the both the SIM and the CAM standards allow us to work in a way that we probably would not have been able to work district-wide. And so the value in many ways is incalculable, simply for that reason.
Yes, Frank?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hobson, I'm not sure you ever completed where you were leading me to, but let me respond. Whether or not a district identified a lot of cost, a little cost, or no cost in that division that you were citing, there were some threads, and I tried to capture those in the report, that everybody made comments about, almost everybody made comments about. One, that they mostly see the issue as time, not money, that is at issue. And two is that they believe they are doing research-based best practice in their educational programs. The SIM standards, however you want to say that, either happened to or were designed to be a part of something that presented schools with best practices at a state level in terms of the curriculum goals and standards. If those standards went away, not just the acronyms, but the standards themselves and the assessment went away, they would have to recreate something in order to be providing best practice to their students in educating the kids.
Yes, please.
Mr. Chair, does a witness have the possibility of answering a question that hasn't been asked?
Feel free. I think I think Representative Hobson was watching a rerun of Perry Mason, and so she's practicing on Frank. But yes, please, Ron, go ahead.
Lest you think that we are coming before you as blind advocates of SIM and CAM, I would like to comment at least from one superintendent's perspective. Given the financial crunch that we're in, I am hopeful that we can spend our time refining the components of SIM and CAM that are currently in existence and look very, very carefully at any expansion of that program, at least in the near term. There are some areas that are scheduled to come into place, and I think down the line they will indeed have value. But I think Doug has said it, Frank has said it, and I will say it again. There is an investment of time that goes into the development of alignments toward standards. And right now we're certainly approaching max out in terms of the time that we have to put into these things. I speak specifically on a personal level about the foreign language requirement that is still to come on. While perhaps it's already a done deal and I can't do anything about it, standards development in physical education and arts, etc., I think those are all valuable pieces of curriculum, but I do think they add to the complication of the work that we do.
Yes, Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Nasso, so is that investment of time that you just described accounted for in the budget numbers that you proposed about the savings for SIM and CAM?
No, in this sense. What I tried to do, as I understood the request for how much does this cost, in fact, the instructions we were given in filling it out, was how much money would be saved if a program went away. And we have in-service funds, we have in-service days in our school district that we utilize for that kind of development work. Those days, that time and that work will be used with our staffs for that development, regardless of what it is we're asked to put in place.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
So why not include those in-service days and those dollars for staff development in your total SIM number?
Because it depends on how you want to look at it. It's not a savings. We can't eliminate those days if we don't have SIM and CAM. That's the point I'm trying to make. It's a false number. I suspect we could do a type of auditing that accountants often do and say, okay, let's take your operations and say how much of that could we reasonably assign to SIM as an example. By that measure, I could probably assign 80% of what every one of my elementary classroom teachers do. But when I eliminate SIM, it doesn't mean that I can eliminate 80% of my classroom teachers. because they're going to be doing very important things. I can't even eliminate the other 20%. So I think it's a false reading of what the costs of the program are. It's an accountant's reading, but it's not a superintendent's reading of the costs, for what it's worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, I'd like to make a small statement. We've had a number of opportunities to hear the superintendent from Portland, and the crux of his message, of course, has been very supportive. And the committee has received a letter from the superintendent in Salem indicating her support for that and how it's an integral part of their educational program.
Mr. Chair Backman,
yes.
May I follow up on what my colleague has said? What Ron is alluding to is the fact, and explaining, is that our teachers are vested and they have incorporated the best practices in their instruction and in their work today. Our teachers are doing the work as we are sitting here. To eliminate SIM and CAM would not eliminate them doing the work they know that will cause students to learn and have the best possible education. We continually plan. We continually work. Eliminating the SIM will not eliminate our responsibility to continually to improve our system. The SIM and the CAM provide a focus that enables us to be more effective in our planning and to continue moving toward the standards that we've defined over the last decade. And again, we come back to the goal of the original goal, which is to have a quality education for every child, and that's we have the ability to continue to focus upon that worthy goal. I would also echo what Ron has said, that if we can stop the SIM where it is today and not add the other components that are contemplated. As a former high school social studies teacher, it pains me greatly not to ask the to look at a including the standard for social studies, but also I know if you take a social studies department of any large high school, it would be very difficult for even those teachers who work together every day to agree upon the standard, I would think. I'm thinking back to my former department. So that would be the one thing in terms of looking at the SIM I would ask the committee to take into consideration.
Frank.
Ms. Chair and Representative Hobson, I just wanted to comment. There are some districts not on this list that have sent some data in, just a few others, and I didn't think they would make a significant difference in the result, with the exception of one, which I just received recently, which is Portland. And they do have a number attached to their response. I'm sorry, I don't have that with me. I thought I did, but I don't find it here in my stack. What I do remember about their response is that they repeat. They give a number, but they also repeat the same kind of caution about interpretation. The issue for them is time, how teachers and other staff use time. The issue for them, as it is with other districts, is a matter of having some standards which they use for development of their curriculum and core academic content. And they're going to be there, whether we call them SIM or CAM or not, and some of them are incorporated, third point, in the federal law, which has some specific academic areas identified, and as I mentioned earlier, requires the assessment and the reporting against those standards. So their information is similar to that we got from most other districts.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate your being here and your testimony.
Thank you.
Nancy Hardigan, please.
Mr. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to provide an answer to probably the most frequently asked question that we've had over at the department in the last several weeks, the costs related to our system of standards and assessments. What I'd like to do, you do have a report from the department in your at your desk, and what I'd like to do is first explain the approach that we took to this study to walk through the key findings, and then to quickly walk through the document and explain our methodology, and then to answer any questions that you might have. We took a little bit different approach than the COSA survey. What we did was to identify the various activities related to standards-based instruction and the SIM and CAM, and took a look at the K-12 system, the entire system, and tried to identify the amount of time required to perform the activities. Then we used average costs, both from the database initiative data at the department, and also we did use some of the information gathered on the COSA survey. So it was kind of a combination. Once we had identified what we thought were all of the costs, then we also allocated those costs between those that are required under the No Child Left Behind Act and those that are not federally required. So that is our basic approach. And what we found for the SIM, we found an estimated total cost statewide of $21.6 million each year in general fund dollars, with $17 million of that being devoted to activities that are required under NCLB, and $4.6 million that are not federally required. And much of the time, you'll see as we get into the report, that was not required was attributed to work samples that are performed in the classroom and are not federally required. What you'll also see is that these costs are higher than those that came out of the COSA survey, and there's really two reasons for that. First, we assigned a cost to every school district, and you saw in the COSA study that some districts reported that they would have no savings. What we determined that, for example, the time spent on administering state assessments would continue in every district, and so we did assign a cost for that, even though some of those costs will continue under federal requirements. The other item that we included were costs incurred at the Department of Education, and those are not part of the COSA survey. So those are the major differences in the two studies. Looking at the CAM, we found a cost estimate of $4.9 million per year to implement the CAM, and none of those activities would be required under the No Child Left Behind Act. As with the COSA survey, we believe that districts would experience very little direct cost savings if the SIM were eliminated, that the majority of costs are in teacher time that would be allocated in another way. We found it actually pretty difficult to isolate these costs because many of these practices are well integrated into the curriculum and instruction and are recognized as effective classroom practices, as you heard from the superintendents. And then as far as estimating the Department of Education costs, one thing we found in looking at the current year expenditures is that those have been drastically reduced in terms of general fund dollars being spent on SIM and CAM activities just because of the budget cuts. And so what we tried to do was identify those costs for 2002-03 and then also estimate the amount that would be needed next year to carry activities forward. So those aren't necessarily in the budget for next 03-04, but simply what are the activities the department needs to carry out over the next year. So I think what I'll do now is turn your attention to page 3, and this is a summary of the costs that we found. And for example, if you look at statewide annual costs for the SIM, first we looked at the cost of administering assessments, and if you'll see there are three different columns. All of the assessments currently underway are required under federal regulations, and so that $2.4 million that you see for administering assessments are all federal requirements. The next item, for example, work samples, a $2.5 million cost, none of those activities are required, and so that's how the analysis was put together. We also identified record-keeping costs, which you heard from the superintendents. SIM and assessment support. Many districts in the COSA survey identified costs related to having a SIM coordinator. Often this was perhaps one teacher had one or two periods a day that were allotted to SIM activities. Larger districts had more, and we basically came up with an average cost statewide to do that. There were some small non-salary costs identified as well by districts. And then the Department of Education costs, the Office of Assessment, we identified what they would expect to need to spend for next year, same in the Office of Curriculum and Instruction. So in total, $21.6 million total for the SIM, with $4.6 million not directly required under federal regulations. And then for the CAM, we relied more heavily there on the COSA survey, and basically used kind of an average of the time allotment that those districts were suggesting they would need to implement CAM, and then we used the average statewide costs. If you move pages 4 through 6, are just these document our assumptions, and in every area we've tried to show how we came up with these particular cost estimates. And then if you move to page 7, I'll just give you an example to show you how we went through the estimates. For example, on state assessments, we identified the number of third grade teachers across the state who would be involved in giving assessments. Our Office of Assessment and Evaluation has come up with estimated amounts of time that teachers would need to spend, and then we just multiplied those up at and got a statewide number and an average teacher salary cost per hour, and generated that $2.4 million estimate. So that kind of gives you the methodology. We basically did that just across the board on all of those costs, trying to identify the time that you would spend either per student or per teacher, and then to use an average cost statewide.
And Nancy, that again is per year.
These are annual costs, yes. I think what we tried to do was document our assumptions real clearly, because obviously the numbers could shift slightly if based on what your assumptions are. But I think this is a reasonable place to start and a reasonable way to estimate the cost. And I would be happy to respond to any questions that you might have.
Go ahead, Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nancy, if I'm reading your data or your information correctly, the only thing that is included within the number that isn't time is the one category supplies of $790,000.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoffman, that's correct.
Representative Dalto.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure if you were going to ask a question. Nancy, I just have a quick question. You know, I should probably know this, but are charter schools subject to the SIMCAM mandate?
Representative Backlund, Representative Dalto, yes, they are. Charter schools are, as public schools, they are a part of the state assessment system.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
Nancy, are you able to break out charter schools and sort of the annual statewide cost in your spreadsheet here for charter schools in particular?
Representative Delgo, I think that would be very difficult to do. Charter schools do not have the same reporting requirements, and we don't gather nearly as much data on charter schools as we do on our regular other regular schools.
Just a curiosity. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Nancy. I imagine you've worn a path and a carpet coming to this hearing with me. Already, we appreciate your information.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Folks, the people who have testified are those who have signed up to testify, and I have a note here from Steve Schopp, who would like to testify at this time. He's self-employed, and he would like to testify and get back to work. So, Steve, come on up.
Thank you, Chairman Beckman, representatives. My name is Steve Schopp. I live in Tualatin, and I've been involved for a good many 4 years in raising awareness about the SIMCAM to parents, passing on a lot of testimony I've gathered over the last 4 years, and really piercing that firewall between yourselves, superintendents, and the real world out there in the classroom where the teachers try to do their job. The magnificent teachers we have here in Oregon that have been continually struggling through these endeavors since the adoption and implementation of the SIM in the CAM. I appreciate the recognition from Superintendent Naso that there are accounting audits and there are superintendent audits. I appreciate some of the questions from Representative Dalto regarding what's being presented today as the cost of SIM and CAM. I have a couple things here that are highly relevant. And when we talk about relevance, I wonder, since implementation, during the whole course of the 12 years, was not the cost of SIM and CAM relevant to the many districts throughout the state, to the state itself? There's much talk about relevancy of the SIM and CAM to education. And I'm wondering if that relevancy somehow appears selectively. When looking at the importance of the SIM and CAM relative to cost, I'd like to first of all read something from a recent, very recent board news update from North Clackamas School District, Superintendent Ron Naso's district. This is right from their website. Students will be able to earn a diploma without meeting all the district-required Certificate of Initial Mastery benchmarks under a plan reviewed by the school board last Thursday. If students are able to demonstrate what they know by other means, rather than passing a state test in reading, writing, speaking, or math, they can meet the requirement the plan suggests. Karen Phillips, Director of Secondary Support Services, outlined the work of a committee of community and staff members. If approved, students who have failed a state test twice could instead use work samples, national test results, work completed in a native language or other than English, or advanced placement scores, etc. students who pass the test using modified testing conditions would meet the district standard. So you see that the SIMINDICAM and the standards, they fluctuate. Now, as you all, I know you're familiar with the many fluctuations that have undergone during the implementation of the SIMINDICAM. When discussing cost, and I know that's the primary focus of this hearing, over the last 4 years, I've received just countless correspondence from people, teachers and parents in the classroom who observed and sat in board meetings where FTEs were adopted to deal with the SIM, the scoring, and whether district-wide or in a large school. The amount of people that have been added to staff, the amount of hours the staff dedicates solely for SIM. We've had counselors who have become SIM facilitators instead of doing counseling work. The extent of the time and effort and dollars, which we'll never know the real amount, let's face it, we're using superintendent accounting here. It has been massive, and this is what the message is from the classroom, from the teachers, from the parents. Not only the lack of attention has been paid to the time draining, which they seem to echo at times, but surely when we're looking through such a monumental undertaking, we rely as the public on this body to use the agencies as long as their information is reliable. Other than that, you're here to represent us, the public out here. And the public does not support the SIMINDICAM. They don't want the SIMINDICAM. They didn't vote for the SIMINDICAM. They want it gone. They witness it on a yearly basis, on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, what it's doing in the classroom. They understand that it's not a matter of the people, the teachers in the classroom and the parents not understanding issues, the cost, how they relate to the efforts in the classrooms. There are no anti-public education folks out here. They simply want the money spent on the very basic and fundamental things that all these schools do, and they do well. But they want their money returned to those areas. I want to read one short letter here. This is from a parent, one of the many parents. This happens to be also from North Clark in the school district. A district that has been seemingly touted as one who gets it, who has parents, teachers, everyone on board. Well, do they? I talk to the parents and the teachers all there all the time. Many other districts from Medford, Astoria to Bend, throughout the valley, and I have done so for many years. Steve, my wife and I recently attended a parent-teacher conference at Rex Putnam High School, North Clackamas School District. Between our two children, we visited with 23 teachers. We asked each of them the following question. What are your feelings about SIM and CAM? Every teacher except one answered, do you want me to tell you how I really feel? Or do you want me to tell you what they want me to tell you? One teacher just said, SIM CAM sucks. It causes me to dumb down my classes. I cannot teach the way I want to because I have to teach to the test. These teachers were candid with us because we know them well. Between our six children, we have at least one student at Rex Putnam for 14 years nonstop. My wife and I also attended Rex Putnam in the 70s. Many of the teachers we had are now administrators. The system is not good, and I'm not speaking from the standpoint of a parent of students who are struggling. Our students are honor students. They have been cheated out of the education they deserve because of the limitations of this program. Now, the money that is being expended on this program could have saved the 5 days of school that are being cut. This may also harm our senior who is applying for college out of state, where they don't even know what a SIMCAM is. No, the colleges out of state don't know what a SIM and CAM are. In fact, last month, at my daughter's high school, I have a junior in high school, a lot of the staff there, the teachers are fabulous, public education is marvelous in my view, but it's been under assault. During college night, admissions expert staff from the university system in Oregon came and presented a very clear and comprehensive picture to the students, the juniors and seniors in attendance there, some 200 of them or so, to give them a real clear understanding of what they need to be focusing on, looking at, in anticipation for any Oregon universities. And here it is in print. A vast list covering every conceivable thing. And what do you suppose isn't on there and wasn't mentioned throughout the entire presentation? The SIM and the CAM. Not one word about a SIM. Now, what's going on? We're being told it's vital to education. The teachers say it's not. We're being told it's necessary for college. Or these people out there are being told this. It's not. Not even Oregon universities. Now here we are, 12 years into the reform. We're facing a circumstance where the budget situation is in crisis throughout the state, every district. And the people who have perpetuated this reform are then asked as experts to tell you what it's been costing. How can that possibly lead to a legitimate analysis of the cost? Along with the lack of tracking the cost, which the 500 employees of the Department of Education, at least some of them should have been doing this all along, visiting the schools, actually talking to the teachers, and without the filter of the teachers' union, which is a constant firewall. Even in my school, when I talk to the many teachers, they're never asked what they feel about the SIM and the CAM, and yet the union rep and the administrations frequently meet, and that's how the simulated opinions are formed. So as we move on through this process of doing the right thing and abolishing the SIM and the CAM, are we to listen to and rely on those who have perpetuated this program and want to for another dozen years? I want rock-solid evidence. I came here 3-4 years ago and testified in front of another committee, and it was almost identical, the same drumbeat. When you look at NAEP scores, when you look at SAT scores, when you look at ACT scores, there's no recognition of some kind of offsetting benefit from SIM and CAM. In fact, if you look from 1995, SAT scores, the lead we had over the national average has dropped by 7 points. A couple years ago when NAEP scores came out, it was just slightly after the newspapers reported from the ODE that it is true that it was stated that our elementary levels are getting it and it's showing progress, and the middle school and the high upper levels are still have yet to, ways to go. A mere 2 months later, and this is I think it was just last fall or possibly the year before, the NAEP scores came out, and Mr. Superintendent Bunn was struggling with the realization that the fourth graders did a poor job on the fourth grade math and reading than the eighth graders did, completely flip-flopping what they're presenting as some kind of trend where the earlier grades were going to eventually lead into the upper grades following suit. The evidence is simply not there. So when you're talking about the dollars or the success of the reforms, I urge you to move beyond this firewall of superintendents. And reach out there and face the realities in the classroom and try to do something to move beyond the political machine that's behind this. The union hierarchy, COSA, OSBA, these people have stood by and let this monumental failure, and it is a failure, it is either going to be realized today with your efforts, or a year from now, or 2 years from now, or 4 years from now, or a dozen years from now. The benefits aren't there. Not in North Clackamas, not in Bend, certainly not Jefferson High School. There's no reduction of the achievement gap. And if you want to have evidence of a success of reform, you must use something other than the reform itself. I've got many other comments here covering a wide spectrum. I don't think I need to go there. It's so vast, the words, the comments, even the tears coming out of the classrooms, the parents, the students, the teachers. We know how to teach. Education wasn't invented in 1991 with the SIM and the CAM. Teachers and staff know how to evaluate, to measure, to use simplified assessments and turn them into focus. We're stumbling down a path here that can only be propped up with shallow words. No data, no documentation. We need to do more than that. We need to make absolutely sure before we adopt a huge, monumental reshaping of our public school system that we know it's going to work. That was never done. many legislators were concerned about that in the legislation they put in. This is not to be meant to be implemented without additional funding. There was other safeguards, all of them abandoned as the state chose to move forward. Parents out here and teachers out here screaming, what in the heck is going on? We get totally two different stories. If you talk to the superintendent of a district or you talk to the teachers, they just don't understand it. It's too complicated. I think the teachers get it. The parents get it. I get it. And maybe there's some other additional work that this body can do to move us in the right direction. And education, as we know, it's not going to cease to exist. It existed in 1989 and it will exist tomorrow. And we can do a much finer job. Thank you. Any questions?
Representative Dalton.
No. Okay.
Representative Avakian next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve, I appreciate you coming down on your work day, in the middle of your work day, to come and testify before this committee. I know you had to come a long way. I struggle myself with SimCam, and there are a lot of points that I struggle with, the relevance of students succeeding on into college. You know, like you suggest, that colleges across the country don't know what, some of them don't know what the SimCam is. As I look at the cost numbers from the school districts, I really wonder if that is a complete and accurate picture of the total cost. I wonder about that, wondering out loud. I wanted to tell you, I have three high schools in my district. I represent Salem, parts of Salem, and there are three rather large high schools in my district, and thousands of parents of high school students live in my district. And something confuses me, and I wanted to ask you about it. My question is, you make the statement that parents and teachers are screaming about what the heck is going on. I haven't heard from one parent, one student, or one teacher from my district this session about SimCam. It's been in the newspapers. It's been on everybody's, it's been the forefront of our agenda here. And my question is, for all these people that are really concerned about Sim and Cam and really frustrated about it and really question the necessity of it, why do you think I'm not hearing from folks?
Well, it's very simple. When you have school administration giving out a regular dose of commentary via school papers and such, it's been so tainted that people in part are reluctant to go against what's being presented as such a gleaming, wonderful approach. But take those and put those aside. This is what I mean by the problem here, because you don't directly hear like I do in mass. It doesn't mean that it's not there. I can't explain how activism evolves and how it doesn't evolve. But I know I never got involved in anything until I started talking to many, many, many teachers and hearing the same story over and over again. And over a long period of years.
Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there was a pothole in my district, I'd probably hear about it from somebody. You know, there are often things that all sorts of things that I hear about that occur in the district that I hear about. So I you're very close to these parents, it sounds like it.
In your district as well.
And what I can't understand is why you have heard from, a lot of people, I don't want to say how much, but you've heard from a lot of people that really are concerned about SimCam, but I haven't heard from anybody. And so, well, I don't understand the disconnect there.
Representative Dalto, regarding the teachers, and I've heard this countless times. I mean, they're simply, sitting there in a situation where they want to teach, number one. They don't want to become advocates. Number two, they're faced with circumstances that they're openly discussing their criticism of what's being so forcibly pushed upon them. I can't tell you how many stories I've heard that, that's a non-starter. You're not going to get anything but hard grief and hardship. Whether it's, there's circumstances in Milwaukee High School. They're just all over the place. Stories about, it's extraordinarily difficult to face such a wall and without being tainted. And they really are, afraid of being tainted. And that's why I urge you to do something. Survey the teachers. I mean, is there? I realize in the difficulties in dealing going through the union, but is there something preventing the state, the Oregon Department of Education, is simply conducting polls?
Mr. Chair, one final question. Thank you. Actually, we've had some teachers give testimony on this issue, and the teachers who have come in have been supportive of SimCamp.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
So, one final question, and that is, do these thousands of people across the state that hate SimCamp really exist?
Well, I would ask, well, of course they exist. You know, why am I here if they don't exist? You know, I might add that do the in-service days that bring in paid consultants to address an entire school's teaching staff all day long with no students in the class, and the teachers tell me that it's a complete and total waste of time. They use whatever excuse they can use to get out of it. That if a district has four or five, six of these days during the year, that is it real to not assign that cost in dollar value to determine what the SIMs cost, because they'd simply be wasting it on something else if they didn't have the SIM? It's ridiculous. I'm just a contractor, but, you know, I mean, if they're wasting the money on something that teachers see as useless, or is it a mysterious situation where they're acquiring something they just don't recognize? I'm talking about 31-year experienced teachers, 21, 12-year, 5-year, the whole spectrum of teachers. Top teachers in Ron Nasel's own district I've spoken to extensively about this. Extensively.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Aukin.
If I might, and not a question, I realize you're done with your testimony. The just to add validity to our process here, which I think has been very good in these hearings, I have had personally or to my office over 200 comments from parents or teachers in my school district with concerns about the SimCam, not just the cost but the implementation, which doesn't necessarily support or oppose a repeal, but I think it's good the process that we're going through, and my district has supported us reevaluating where we are with the SimCam.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Thank you. Over the last year, I've spent a lot of time talking to people about SimCam, teachers, administrators, students, parents, and I've found very few people who think we have a perfect system. I've also found very few people who don't believe that the standards that we have set in place with the SimCam are absolutely necessary, implemented perhaps in a different fashion. And I think, as Representative Vickin says, the process that we're going through here is a good and a valid process. We'll hear from a broad spectrum of all of the stakeholders. I'm going to be at a school board meeting tonight. I have a meeting of all of my district superintendents tomorrow night. I have another task force meeting on Wednesday night. So it's there's going to be a lot of input. Rest assured that you're getting your bang for your $1,200 a year. A month, excuse me. I'm confident that we're going to come up with something that's going to make it much more usable for the teachers and the students. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
I think it's probably closer to 500.
Bonnie Hill had signed up.
More people in your district have computers.
That's right.
All in
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon about this. I am a teacher, an English teacher at Alsea High School and the SIM coordinator for my school. The reason that I'm here is that I read in the Corvallis Gazette Times last week that the legislature would be considering a bill to eliminate the SimCam, and that disturbed me so deeply that I telephoned the Department of Education and asked if there were any way that I could come and offer testimony, and here I am. So,
by the way, we thank you for doing that.
Thank you. I believe very strongly that the SIM is meaningful and relevant to our students and that we are definitely on the right track. I realize that you are considering cost this week, and so I will address the cost to our district. And I know, though, that you will be considering the big picture and sort of evaluating the value of the SIM as opposed to the cost and trying to make a determination that way. So I would like to return to that big picture as well after I talk briefly about cost. You probably know that ALSI is a small rural district about 25 miles west of Corvallis in the Coast Range. Our student population varies from a high of about 275 to a low of about 230, and we're low right now. Our total costs, and this is verified, it's not coming just from our superintendent, I've consulted many people, including our deputy clerk, our total costs right now per year are about $7,900, which come to a total of about 0.04% of our total budget of $1.9 million. These costs are comprised of 1/6 of a teacher salary, and that would be part of my salary right now. I was our SIM coordinator for, well, since the implementation of SIM until just 2 years ago when I was allotted some time out of my day to do this. I do all the record keeping, communicating with students and parents, notification of students of retakes, preparation of reports, that kind of thing. It also is comprised of the cost of supplies, the certificates that we issue, hanging folders, one-time purchase of a filing cabinet, and of mailings. We send out several mailings per year. I think there are some solutions in sight in terms of cost for districts and ESDs that are working on electronic record-keeping systems. And our own ESD right now, the Lynn Benton Lincoln ESD, has an electronic system in which all of the test scores will automatically be entered. So all the school district will have to worry about is entering scores for work samples. That will simplify things quite a bit. In terms of training, I know some people are concerned about the cost of training teachers to implement the SIM, and I think we've made very good progress that way. I've been involved in the writing assessment myself since its inception, and in fact when we were piloting it in the late 1980s, and I think it's been pretty well established that writing training has taken hold across the state. There isn't a lot of work left to be done there, and as we train teachers, obviously there will be less and less training needed. There are lots of free training opportunities as well. I don't know if you're familiar with the Open Network Online, but that is an online interactive free training available to teachers for both writing and math. They actually score student work, enter their scores, they can hit a button, see how experts scored those papers. There's commentary. If they want to see more papers that were scored at a certain score point, they can do that. So it's certainly a very efficient use of money. There are free ESD workshops and the scoring opportunities for teachers to score for the state writing and math problem-solving assessments are there. Those are excellent. In fact, teachers say that's the best training they ever had, is to actually score for the assessments. And lots of in-district trainers and in-services. Statewide, I'm sure people have pointed out to you, but just as I thought about all this, with the TESA coming more online, certainly all the multiple choice tests will be available, which will certainly cut down on printing costs. I know that for the writing assessment, as students move through school, we've been able to recycle some of the prompts, so I assume that some of the test items will be able to be recycled as students, you know, pass through school. And, of course, the No Child Left Behind requirements, so many of the costs are going to be required anyway. I'd like to return now to a look at the big picture of the value of the SIM as opposed to the costs. And I'd like to review the history of the SIM and sort of present an overview of it. And I hope that it won't be tedious for you because I know that you've had to undergo this before. But maybe the difference will be in hearing it from a teacher perspective, from the perspective of the classroom. And it might be a little different with that kind of a twist to it. I've been teaching for 27 years, and you'll be hearing my interpretation of this. I have also worked with hundreds of other teachers around the state, though. I've been a trainer for the writing assessment, and I've run the scoring site at the Lynn Benton ESD. So I've worked with hundreds of teachers, and I've conducted workshops across the state for teachers. And so I can't presume to speak for them, and I don't. I speak only for myself. But I do know that there are many, many other teachers who very strongly support the SIM and who are deeply disturbed at the prospect that it might go away. So just to talk about the problems, I do believe that we had a good school system before this end came along. But as Oregonians paused to examine our education system in the 1990s, thinking about how we might better prepare our students for the 21st century and what kinds of skills would really be required of them to have a successful lives, I think we realized that there were some things that we could improve upon. And one of those was that employers and professors in higher education couldn't help but notice that some of our graduates who came out of our high schools with a high school diploma were somewhat deficient in certain skills that we thought were critical. And the reason for that was our diploma system. Right now, the diploma system, as you know, just requires that students pass a certain number of courses with a minimum of 60% of all the points possible. How that translates into my English classes, for instance, I have a whole list here of just ongoing activities that we do in English classes all the time. And what students have to do in order to pass this class is to piece together at least 60% of all the points possible. Now, it makes my blood boil every time I read in the newspaper that the diploma system relies on seat time. No one ever came, ever, to one of my classes and sat there and passed the class. They had to work hard to earn those 60% of the points possible. But there was no guarantee. There was nothing there that could make them focus on certain skills and achieve a certain level of proficiency in very specific skills that everyone had agreed upon. The mechanism was not there for that to happen. And that's where the SIM came along, which I think makes very good sense, and the CAM. Our goals then, as we thought about this as a state, I think were twofold. One was that we wanted a literate, thinking, informed citizenry in Oregon and the United States. We certainly wanted among the best educated citizens in the world. We wanted them for the workplace, and we wanted them so we could have a working democracy. And we wanted individuals to have successful personal lives. We wanted them to be financially independent and to have effective skills in their social and their personal lives. So that was the goal, I think, the twofold goals. I think we then posed a series of questions. The first one was, what skills and knowledge should all Oregonians have? I don't think we only need to look at this in terms of students, but what do we want all Oregonians? What skills are really critical? What must a person be able to do in the 21st century? We went through this whole process that involved the business community, educators, parents, legislators. What they came up with was reviewed, refined, solicited input. There were meetings held all over the state, and the result of that process were the content standards. That's where the content standards came from. The second question after that was posed was, of all these content standards, which are the most critically important, and which ones can we assess? Because we couldn't assess all of them. Reading broadly is one of those. Read nonfiction, read fiction from a variety of time periods and different cultures, can't assess that. So of all these content standards, that's a worthy goal, and we teach it, but what can be assessed? The results of that discussion were the SIM performance standards, so the distinction between the performance standards and the content standards. And that's what the requirements for the SIM are. Third question was, okay, now we've got these performance standards. Now, to what degree of proficiency should students demonstrate mastery of these skills? The results of that process were our scoring guides, which are wonderful. If I had copies to show you right now, and perhaps you've seen them, of the scoring guides, and you looked at the four level, there's a six-point scale, as you know. If you looked at the four score point, which is considered proficient, I don't think anyone in the country would disagree that that's what constitutes good writing, for example. I think we would reach unanimous agreement that that is what constitutes good writing. So, and I think if we could get everyone scoring at that four level, we would in fact have a very literate, thinking, informed population here in Oregon. The fourth question, once we got the scoring guides in place, was, how will students demonstrate these proficiencies? And there were going to be two ways. One was through the state assessments, and right now there are five of them, and classroom work samples, both of those two ways. Now, this is my own construct. I've never heard anyone talk about the assessments in this way, but I find it helpful, and as I've talked to our school board and people in our community, I think they have found it helpful. I've divided them into different tiers, and in the first tier of assessments, I see reading and literature, writing, speaking, and math. Okay, and there are two assessments in math, as we know, the multiple choice and the problem solving in math. All of those, the reason I separate those into one category is that they are skill-based assessments. Okay, and we've always thought of those as our core subjects in school. All of those can very easily be integrated into a naturally occurring curriculum. And in fact, they should be. If I'm not teaching those things in my English classes, I certainly should be. When opponents say that teachers are just teaching to the test, that is really very uninformed. I'm not teaching to the test. I'm teaching my students how to read and to write. And then they are called upon to read and write on the test. So we have these standards. Teachers teach to the standards. The assessments test those standards. And that's what the connection is. There is a very strong connection. But to say that teachers are teaching to the test is a little off and a little misinformed, I think. Now, in the second tier, I have, and this is part of the phase in two, science and social studies. And as you know, the science assessment is a requirement right now, and the social studies test is still under development. These two assessments are really content-based. They're not skill-based. So for the skill-based assessments, we're looking at what students can do. For the content assessments, we're looking at specific, discrete facts that they know. There's a real difference between, I think, assessing skills and between assessing content. Sometimes I think, in fact I know on those assessments, they are getting at skills. They may, in science or social studies, have students interpret information on a graph or in a chart and see what hypotheses they can draw or what conclusions they can draw. So that's a skill-based kind of question. But they're also content-based. And I think that's where some of the controversy about the SIM enters in. I know where it came from. People said, as we were talking about what people should be able to do, is there a body of knowledge that all Oregonians should know? And that's a reasonable question, and I think we'd all probably be tempted to say, well, yes, there's some few basic things about science and about social studies, about government, that everyone should know. The question is, what are those things? Who gets to decide what they are and to what level of detail? And, of course, that's what people are still talking about. And some of that came from horror stories. Occasionally someone thinking that the Revolutionary War occurred after the Civil War or not understanding the real causes of the Civil War or something like that. So there are some problems there. And there's the potential for that assessment to interfere with a curriculum, if you think about it. For instance, in our school, at 8th grade, we teach earth science. At 9th grade, we teach physical science. At 10th grade, we teach biology. Well, students are tested on all of those things in the science assessment. So our biology teacher does have to put aside some of the biology curriculum, do a review of some of these other skills and knowledge, and then, and you know, so that feasibly could interfere with the biology curriculum. It seems like there are only two solutions as people work through those problems. One is to reach agreement about what that common body of knowledge should be. The other solution could be to include more tasks that require certain kinds of thinking, a scientific kind of thinking, you know, scientific inquiry, or social studies kinds of thinking with charts and graphs and so forth. So I just think it's important to make those distinctions as people object to the SIM and the CAM to understand where they could be coming from. Some of those problems are legitimate questions to ask, but I think we need to give people time to work them out, and I think it's possible to work them out. The third tier, then, are the arts, second language, and physical education. We're phasing in the first two this year. Physical education, as you know, gets phased in next year. We've always called those electives. And the rationale for including those, I know, is that we do want Americans to be among the best educated people in the world. We want to educate the whole person. We want to provide them with kids with marketable skills. Certainly, being fluent in a second language gives them an advantage in the workplace today. And we want to increase their incentives to learn these skills. In my school, where we have very few people of other ethnic backgrounds, it's hard to convince students that they should learn another language. But they will be out there in the middle of Oregon with everyone else after they're graduating, and it will be in their best self-interest to know another language. The potential problem with these, phasing in these, this tier of the assessments, is that they are locally assessed. Now, you almost have to do that because there's unequal access to opportunities. Students in Portland have incredible access to the arts, much more so than students in rural districts. So that has to be true. But on the other hand, the level of proficiency that's required may differ. from district to district. So the SIM requirements may not quite be all the same, and there seems to be something sort of innately not right about that. So we have some problems to work out. In terms of the state assessments themselves, we know that they're tied to the standards, and instruction is tied to the standards. Again, I would just like to reiterate that it's not a matter of teaching to the test, it's a matter of teaching to the standards. But I believe that the assessments are not a top-down artificial layer that's imposed on the students. I know you've heard teachers say this many, many times, but they are an integral part of what we teach. There are only 5 of them. I don't believe that our students are overwhelmed by being asked to take those 5 assessments. It's very easy to schedule only 1 assessment per week, and they're usually divided into sections so that students are not having to spend any more than 45 minutes at a time on any assessment. So they're really spread out, and I don't think that they are or should be overly anxiety-inducing. Most of them are problems and tasks that are exactly what they encounter in their daily curriculum. I think the standards are reasonable and achievable. I wouldn't even call them tough, honestly. I think they're reasonable standards, things that we think everyone should be able to do. Again, they have a solid link to instruction. The scoring guides are the same. When I score students' work in the classroom, it's exactly the same scoring guide that's used to score their work for the assessments. So students can see this continuity. It has an important link to their curriculum, and again, teachers can be creative about how they establish these links. I'll just give you a quick example. When my students take the statewide writing assessment, I make a copy of all their essays before I send them off to be scored. They've been trained, my students, in the scoring guides, so they score their own paper, and they put a piece of tape across their own scores. Then a peer scores their paper, and we put a piece of tape across those scores. I score their paper, and we put a piece of tape across it. Then when we get the papers back from the statewide assessment, there are 2 more places, one for the scores of rater number 1 and one for the scores of rater number 2. We uncover all the scores, and they can see, it is amazing, I should write an article someday, how incredibly close the correlation is among those scores. Students can be trained to use the scoring guides and to assess their own work. They know how to do it, and it's very reinforcing for them. I love the opportunity to send off their work to someone else outside of our district. Otherwise, they're just hearing from me all the time, and it's very reinforcing to hear from someplace outside of our district. When it comes to work samples, that's what I have to say about the assessments. When it comes to work samples, which are also called collections of evidence, which are also called portfolios, and sometimes I think people get those terms confused. I know the public does. I just read in that newspaper article in the Gazette Times last week a misconception about that. Some people seem to think that districts are having to keep all of this physical evidence, videotapes. It said in the newspaper, we have to keep the videotapes of their speaking performances and all their papers. That's not true. All we have to keep, the actual requirements, is that we have the evidence of teacher scores on these different work samples, which we can do electronically. And a district needs to track the results of the state assessments. It is some record keeping. There's no doubt about that. I don't deny that. And it tends to, you know, bunch up during certain times of the year. But we do not have to keep all the physical evidence of these performances. I personally like to. I'm from a small district, so it's much easier. But I think having that all in one place helps students track their own progress. It's very visual. It's very concrete. And I use it in parent communication. When we have student-led conferences, and I give students extra credit for having prepared a way to communicate with their parents about their learning, and they take out their portfolios that have their state scores, that have their work samples, and talk with their parents about their progress. It's very effective that way. I think the benefits to SIM are very strong. For students, I think it underscores the importance of these skills. In other words, it's not just this middle-aged, gray-haired English teacher up there telling them that these scores are important. They know that everyone in the known universe out there thinks that these scores are important. And it invests them and elevates these skills to some level of importance that they might not otherwise see. It's easy when you're that age to just get lost in the day-to-day, you know, tedium of school. I think it provides an incentive for them. It sort of guarantees them. I tell them if you were in a SIM, it sort of guarantees that you have mastered certain skills that everyone agrees are very important. This next point, I think, is essential. It provides a certain continuity for that population of students that we know is very mobile these days. I once heard a figure, and I don't know if this is correct, but that about one-third of our student population is moving around fairly frequently. So when they go from school to school, there's continuity of language as we talk about these skills. You know, when I talk about word choice, in the old days, another teacher might be calling it diction or vocabulary. Now we're all speaking the same language, and it is really helpful for students who have to be in these situations where they're moving quite a bit. I think also the SIM might result in fewer misassigned teachers. It would be interesting to see how many teachers are misassigned these days. Some of those misassignments are inevitable, and they can't be helped, especially in small districts. But they do occur. Maybe with the SIM, this will occur less frequently. We'll get teachers who really do have background and preparation in these different areas. And when misassignments are necessary, having those SIM standards and the SIM itself really helps those teachers. I know a foreign language teacher who's been misassigned to teach English in a district this year, and he was absolutely lost. He had no idea what to do. He was a personal friend of our family, and I tried to help him out, but giving him the scoring guides and walking him through those was incredibly helpful. I think it's also a benefit to students because it is a challenge. It's not impossible. It's reasonable. Students, well, I think it's human nature to complain a lot about things, but when students have done something that has been challenging, they feel a sense of satisfaction. I've seen that in our senior projects. Students drag their feet and they complain, but when they finish, they know that they have really accomplished something, and they feel very satisfied with what they've done. To parents, I think the benefits of SIM are, again, that guarantee that their students have achieved certain skills. It's a vehicle for communicating about student progress. And for Oregon, I think it's a guarantee that we have these informed, literate, thinking citizens who can participate in elections in a thoughtful way and who can participate in other forms of government. And it's an aid to our economy. We have an informed workforce, a competent workforce. Some people say, why are only one-third of our students earning the SIM? And I have some ideas about that. I think some students say, why bother? It's not a requirement. I can get my high school diploma. Why should I bother? There is a lack of incentives, and I think that we could provide more incentives for them to earn a SIM. I know some Portland schools are tying it to the diploma. And I think employers, so many of whom supported the SIM to begin with, might at least ask that question on application forms, perhaps not restricting, applicants, but at least asking the question so students can see that they are thinking about it. Another reason, perhaps, that some students don't earn a SIM is that there are an increasing number of standards to meet. And I remember early on the Department of Education estimated that perhaps 2-5% of students would be unable to earn a SIM because of limitations, that they have learning disabilities and so forth. I noticed on our last report card from the state, I think it said that 12% of students statewide have learning disabilities right now. That might not preclude all of them from earning a SIM, but certainly it's a limiting factor for some of them. Nevertheless, I don't think that's a reason to scrap a whole system that is good for such a great majority of students. There are alternatives to the SIM, too. We've had juried assessments in place for a while, and I've helped score some of those at the department. And the PASS system at the university level is working with SIM people right now to try to arrange some reciprocal arrangements between PASS and SIM, and they're working those out right now. I think the cost versus the benefit, when you consider SIM, you just have to come down on the side of benefits clearly outweighing the costs. I think that we need vision. We need to persevere with the SIM system. We need to keep our vision, thinking about what's good for our young people. We need to have patience. We need to educate the public. There's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of misinformation. We need opportunities to refine the system. I think we should trust the Department of Education and all the teachers that those people work so closely with. We need the clear support of the legislature to do this work. And I think we need leadership from the legislature to find funding to educate Oregon's children as they should be educated. There is something deeply, deeply, deeply wrong with our education system today. It's not the SIM system. It's that we don't have enough money to do the work that we need to do. It's resulting in staff cutbacks, as you know, large class sizes. Just talked to a teacher in Bend who had over 50 students in her English class. You can't teach people to write if you have 50 students in your English class. You can't do it. It's resulting in a consolidation of schools, which I think is a huge mistake. If you have students attending schools that are not in their own communities and they have no sense of community, that's wrong-headed, and I think we'll be paying a price for that, not to have any sense of community. And our facilities, statewide. I know I've probably run over my time here, but I just have to make one more quick comment. A couple of years ago, one of the prompts for the statewide writing assessment, one of the persuasive prompts, you probably know that students get three prompts, each in a different mode. The persuasive prompt a few years ago was something like this. Imagine that an anonymous donor gave a large sum of money to your school, and the administration and school board were soliciting suggestions from students as to what to do with that money. Convince them of, you know, some way that you think this money should be spent. And I was working at a scoring site at the time, and I could sort of see over time that people seemed to be getting depressed. The scorers did, and I found the director, and I could feel this feeling in the room, and I said, what's going on? What's happening? And it turned out that a lot of them were reading these papers that were written about this sum of money, and they were, number one, surprised to find that students were not responding to this question in a frivolous way at all. They were completely serious. And most of them talked about the terrible condition that their schools were in. I mean, there were stories of roofs leaking, of sewage that was backing up, of the terrible condition of bathrooms, of their classrooms, of learning materials. And those are the kinds of things that we need to fix, and we need strong leadership from you to try to solve those problems so that we can guarantee our students the kind of education that they really need. I learned early on as a teacher that human beings are incredibly intelligent and competent, and we need to have high expectations for them. And what you expect is what you'll get. We shouldn't lower our expectations for our students. They need that, and they will respond to it. We have to give them the support to meet those expectations, but we shouldn't lower them. I'm afraid that they hear all this lip service to education. They hear all of us saying how important education is from the national level down to the local level. But when they look around them at their classrooms, at their learning materials, I think that what they are seeing is that they think that adults of Oregon don't really care about education enough to come up with the money that is needed for a good education for them. So I guess I'd like to conclude by asking you, please, to help us solve those problems.
Well, Bonnie, thank you very much. You've made a long trip, and we appreciate that, and we appreciate what you had to say.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're running short on time, but we have others who have signed up. Ed Johnston, coming up, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Edward Johnston from Lincoln County, and I have to disagree with what the former speaker said. I started and worked with the residents and citizens of Lincoln County, which we recalled our entire school board. Part of one of the things that we recalled them was because of the SIM and CAM and because of other financial structures of audits. We want to know where our money is. So it really frustrates us when I represent, and I could confidently say thousands of my residents in Lincoln County, you know, we want to see the semi-cam gone. We want to take that money, put it back in athletics, put it back into shops, auto shop, wood shop, put the money where the kids are truly going to be learned and taught. SIM and CAM has, right now, if we continue for the next 12 years, it's going to put us in deeper debt than what we got now with no results. We haven't seen results in 12 years. Why are we going to sit there and throw more money down a toilet drain that ain't going to do no good for the kids? Now, an auto shop will teach the kids how to repair cars. That'll guarantee them a job. Wood shop will teach carpentry. Guarantee them a job. Now, we have to be, if we're talking kids' futures, let's be realistic. Let's not live in this fantasy world where people are coming off and thinking that if we're going to throw all these tests out to the kids and it's going to do them good. We have to teach them some structures. We have to teach them mainly some techniques of how to keep employment. And the only way to do that is educate them in the fashion where they got job learning and techniques like auto shop, math, and those type of things. Now, SIM and CAM is in our school district, I've been told roughly, to the best of my knowledge, is over $2 million we spent in our school district. Now, auto shop, will make sure that at least 150 to 300 students in my school district have employment. Summer camp won't guarantee their employment. Woodshop guarantees carpentry, make sure they have employment. Home economics, teaching cooking and sewing, guarantees them employment. You know, if we're being realistic and talking about training our kids, you know, I mean, when I started to recall the school board, a lot of it was because of what's going on right now, the finances. Students and teachers, well, mainly teachers, I know have been threatened if they spoke against the Salmon Can, they'll lose their job. They have told me that in confidence. So it really disturbs me when I hear everybody flattering on things to just justify somebody else's extraordinary 50,000 plus year job. You know, when it comes down to it, I'd much rather have an auto shop that I know that kid's going to be able to make sure that he can not only repair his own car, his mother's car, if they're a single family. He gets the education he truly needs to make sure he's got a future. The way we're going right now, we're not guaranteeing our kids any future. I mean, we can speak on that. That goes back to school surveys and the whole thing, without how they've already been proven that they're not confidential. What really cheers me up is that she says teachers have been teaching to the test for local school. Well, I was on a local school committee in Lincoln County to lead a local school committee. I heard from numerous parents when I was on the local school committee against Sim and Cam, why we're wasting money. Why ain't we got kids in auto shop? Why ain't we teaching them trades? A professional trade, you know, instead of wasting money. To me, this is a waste of money. In 12 years, nothing's been good on it. I sat in a room next door 2.5 years ago and stated I was going to recall the school board, and this was part of what I said. Now, Lincoln County residents spoke out. Please listen to Lincoln County. Because they're not saying it out of that we don't want to educate our kids. Of course we want our kids educated. That's the fundamentals of why we're paying the taxes, to make sure. You know, because we take the pride of what our forefathers paid for us to get educated. At least we all should. You know? The other thing that gets to me right now, Beaverton School District tonight is going to decide if American Revolution and American history should be taught in their school anymore. How's that going to affect the Sim and Cam? You know, school districts across the state are doing that. Think about it. We're just throwing more money for nothing because there's not going to be nothing for them to even work the Sim Cam if Beaverton throws their American Revolution, American history out. I mean, then that's what they're doing tonight, voting on. In Lincoln County, September 15th, our school board decided no more parent-teacher conferences. It's a waste. Parents have no response to the teachers. They're not even really allowed in the school to go down there and have conversations with their teacher. There's no more parent-teacher conference. People are upset about that. But the school, former school board and superintendent that we would like to get rid of, made that threat and made that a reality to make Lincoln County hostage for us not to vote the recall because we want to justify the $25 million that's unaccounted for. We have a right to know where our money is. And when you sit there and put more money down the drain and justify this and call it and state that we're sitting there defending our children and this is for our children's future, this ain't for our children's future. This is to jeopardize or to judge and justify a buddy's job, in my opinion, or somebody else's position. Because if we cared about our kids' future, we would make sure that they had the fundamentals and trades that were taught in schools when all of us went to schools. All of us had a trade, home economics, auto shop, wood shop. You know, what are we doing now? We're taking that away from the kids. We're making sure that they have no basis. We're taking away sports away from our kids. I played football in school. That did something for me. It gave me incentive. It gave me pride. Take that away, you know, there's nothing there. If it wasn't for auto shop and wood shop, I would have never had a future in a career. You know, I was a certified technician. I was a new car dealership mechanic for years. You know, I was a professional bodyguard, you know, a bouncer. And if I didn't have that in school, those opportunities, I would have never had that opportunity I had to get in those professions. And in my opinion, if you keep going on the way we're going now, you're stealing those opportunities for the children in our future. You're going to have to live with what you're leaving for your grandchildren. And that is the point that has to be related to everybody. What are we leaving for our grandchildren? Are we leaving them nothing but a greater, deeper debt with more confusion? We don't know how the money's being spent? We can't continue to do that. We've been doing that for the last 15 years in the state. The last 10 years, we had a lot of money that was coming in. We were able to do a lot of things. Well, right now, with PERS and everything, we're in a pinch. Now, let's tighten our belts. Let's reassess where our state is going to, reassess what our state feels about our students and our children for their true future, not what we're trying to allege and claim that we're stating it is for their future, or we're saying we're doing this for students. I mean, our paper last week, you know, there's things with student accountability funds that money is apparently not justified what was spent. First time we started seeing this coming out of school. I've been asking for the audit, pushing for more. The students have rights to know where their money is. So do the parents who pay the taxes. When I pay property taxes, I have right to know how that money is being spent. Now, if I disagree with it, I have right to say so. And collectively, at least in Lincoln County, we decided that our former school board, the way they were spending our money in our school district, was not spending it the way Lincoln County wanted it to be spent. We expect to be listened to and heard. And let's do a direction that is in best interest of our children's future, not for the future of some agency's job or some agency's future. We got to make sure our kids have a trade, our kids have the financial means, our grandkids and their grandkids. Not just sitting there that you know, my buddy's out of a job and I'm sorry, you know, we got to create another position. The Simon Camp hasn't really done anything for the state. They're still trying to figure out how it works. Well, if it was designed and it didn't work to begin with, it's like a motor. When you rebuild a motor and you got a bad rod when you put a rod in the motor, you don't sit there and run that motor without pulling that rod and putting a new one in. Because you know it's going to blow up. And that's exactly the direction that the state is happening or heading right now. So until we decide that our children's future is that's what we're stating is what we mean, instead of constantly, like we hear in Lincoln County, that they're cutting budget funds for our children's future and they're trying to save their positions. We're not sitting there saying that we want our teachers fired. No. You know, but the other point with the frustration of the way the state's going, maybe we ought to fire all state employees and then rehire them back at different contract levels. Or forget the contracts. We hire them back and this is the pay, this is the medical benefit you get, this is what we need to save our state for. You know, that takes a state, the community, the public, everybody to work together to save the state. Not a selective few that think that they're coming out ahead of the game. Now, if we're going to be serious about our children's future, $30 to $50 million definitely, as was roughly quoted, but I think it's a lot higher than that, definitely we'll put auto shops back, put training back to the kids, wood shops to make sure they can have a trade, electronic shops, technical shops where they can have a trade, home ec where they can have a trade in looking, cooking, and sewing and that stuff. That's how we get our cooks instead of going to these traditional trade schools now that are popping up all over. Our schools were fundamental to teach us when we grew up. Now, amongst most of these people, I'm here on my own recognizance. I'm not here on tax dollar paid to be here. You know, I'm here because I'm frustrated with what the state is doing and claiming they're for the benefit of our children. When all I see is people here on a tax dollar coming here to testify and on a taxpayer role. Now, I figure if they're going to be here, they ought to not be paid for the day. If that means that much, they ought to come here on their own, just like I did. Just about everybody else who's come here to testify in one hearing or another. Government employees should not be paid to come to the Capitol to testify. They should do that on their own if it means that much to them. But I encourage you to think about the children's future and not claim that you're stating it for a children's future. Show the state of Oregon that for once the state means and a direction to protect the children instead of continually misguiding our citizens what's happening today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Okay, Beth Ann Darby.
Goodness gracious.
Chair Backlund, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Beth Ann Darby. I work for the Oregon Education Association, representing 45,000 educators, including teachers, certified staff, classified staff, community college members. I just have a few short comments because I know we're running out of time here, but I don't want to be a firewall, as one of the previous speakers mentioned about our union. I want you all to know that our membership is a little bit divided on this issue of SimCam, and I wanted to just talk about some of the reasons why we feel that way. Our official position is one of support, but we believe that there ought to be more funding for fuller as we progress towards full implementation. We're not surprised by the two surveys because we know SIM is already well integrated into the classroom and that the costs are hard to extrapolate. We have concerns about the additional workload required by SIM because we know that only minimal additional staff was hired to administer this process, and there is additional administrative responsibility. We also have concerns about the cost of throwing out SIM in light of the No Child Left Behind Act, but we are interested in ideas to slow down complete implementation until appropriate funding is available. Many who fought SIM initially now believe implementation has led to best practices for teaching and has also led to best practices for students. SIM requires educators to ensure that they are teaching to high educational standards set by the state, and it also allows students opportunities to achieve beyond basics required for a high school diploma. And with that, I'll answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the number of sign-ups. Are there others who would wish to speak? Yes, please. Oh, we don't have that on the sign-up sheet. Okay.
My name is Donna Hartwig. I'm from Lincoln County, and I'm not going to speak very long. I just have to shoot my mouth off a little bit. I totally agree with Mr. Schultz and Mr. Johnson. I'm not going to reiterate on that. I have talked to teachers and parents in Lincoln County, and they're afraid to say anything. The teachers are, because they know they'll get their fannies sent from one end of the county to the other end of the county to teach if they cross the superintendent. Or they might even get fired. And, I mean, we have a bad situation there. And the thing is, I've also talked to some of the students who took the SIM and CAM. One of the most brilliant students who graduated from our high school said it's stupid. So that might tell you something. And I really resent the fact that people think that teachers don't have the ability to teach unless they have some guideline like that. I've had 8 children in school, and every one of them had wonderful, wonderful teachers. And they were able to teach without anything like SIM and CAM. And when some of my children decided to go to the university, you know what they decided from? The universities. I had one son who was in the top 3% of the SAT. He got bids from Annapolis, from University of California, from Harvard, from many, many schools. It wasn't because of SIM and CAM. It was because of his ability on the test. I had a daughter who had a 3.97 grade. I'm nervous. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. You're doing fine.
And she also was in the top 10%, and she got bids from several universities. They don't care about SIM and CAM. They don't care about that kind of stuff. They don't go looking into their records. They look at their grades. They look at their SAT. And I have just one question to ask you. If this is such a wonderful, wonderful program, why are the SAT tests going down? Why are our scores going down if it's such a wonderful thing? And that's all I have to say. And thank you.
By the way, Thelma, if I had an answer to your question, I would give it to you, but I do not. Thank you. Are there others? Yes, please, Diane.
It's late, so I'll be really brief. I'm a retired public school teacher, 33 years in the Oregon system. I have 5 points to make.
Excuse me, be sure to give us your name, please.
I'm sorry, I thought I did. I'm Diane Waldron, and I'm from Tillamook County. I thought today we were going to see the cost of developing the SIM and CAM tests. That's what I was led to believe when I called the State Department on Friday. We were not presented with the cost of developing those tests. But I'd like to tell you about the development of the Oregon test, which is what happened in 91 when we threw out standardized testing in our schools. We brought in a homemade test called the Oregon test, and we paid a private firm here in Salem, I think, maybe it was Portland, to to develop these tests. They were rewritten every year, so there's no way the test scores could be compared. The tests, furthermore, were politically correct. I remember administering an 11th grade reading test that had a half-page article about a certain representative, Ron Wyden, and how he'd been appealed to for help on a problem, and how wonderfully he had helped resolve the problem, and then there were comprehension questions. And I thought then, what are we doing here, setting up 11th grade students with name recognition all over the state of Oregon for Ron Wyden when they'll soon be voting? We have not been presented with the costs of teaching about OBE, and this is an over the last since 91. I remember at my high school, one day for a works and in service, they brought in a guy from Bill Spady's High Frontier in Colorado, and he told us all sorts of wonderful things that meant nothing. And finally, I asked him how much he was paid to be there that day. Our school district paid him $1,750 for that one day, plus expenses, which I assume meant flying him in from Colorado. Then I still didn't understand what OBE was supposed to be, so I signed up for a workshop through my ESD, where they sent us down to Eugene from Tillamook. It cost $300 to register for a two-day workshop. Your school district had to pay for hotel at the Hilton, in addition to that, and your meals. Just the registration, there were about 300 teachers there from all over Oregon, and there were many of these workshops held that year. Just the registration of 300 teachers times $300 was $90,000 that Bill Spady picked up with his staff of six. And what did they give us for that? They gave us a stack of Xerox papers with circles drawn on them, and wherever the circles intersected, they wrote a word like magnificent, cooperation. It meant absolutely nothing, and everyone stood there scratching their head like the emperor's new clothes. Lastly, you've been asked today, how come teachers aren't coming and complaining about this? We haven't heard enough complaints from teachers. I'll tell you why. Superintendents do not look favorably on teachers who buck the system. In our system, we had a teacher who complained about a financial issue. It didn't even have to do with OBE. And that teacher was the first teacher fired in the state of Oregon under the non-tenure law. Later, that was thrown out because the superintendent had not followed the rules correctly. But the superintendent followed up by falsely accusing that same teacher of hitting a student and putting that teacher on a plan of assistance. Teachers and superintendents have a certain role they have to play. This concludes my testimony. Would you have any questions?
Thank you, Diane. Others? Very good. Well, we've had a full day, and we have a lot to digest, members of the committee. And thank you, audience, for sticking it out to the very end. With that, meeting's adjourned.